up, fool podcast? What's up, fool? We're back.
Back.
Rodrigo's back.
Back for good.
Back some Zacatecas.
Yeah, man.
Back to tell us about fools that are teaching comedy classes. The comedy Ponzi scheme. Where you start off passing out flyers for a year. Then you move up to the guy that passes out the flyers to the guy that's going to pass out flyers. And then you move up to the guy who picks up the flyers from the flyer guy who's going to give the flyers to the comedian. They're going to give it to the young comedian who's going to pass out the flyers. Then if you move up, you get to put rap band-aids on Rudy Moreno's hand.
What's going on, fool? What's up, man?
We don't know, man. What? Rodrigo just started talking about stuff. I don't know. I came in late. We got Ruben Paul over here from Banning.
Yes, sir.
What's happening?
Oh, shit. Yeah.
We have a lot of listeners, bro, from that area, bro.
Oh, hell yeah.
Banning, Wilmington.
Yeah, hell man.
Palmdale, all that shit. We're back
Big
there.
Wilmas.
Wilmas, yeah.
I met a crazy-ass fool for Wilmington the other day.
When you guys were
and
more?
He was telling me about some guy that used to be from Wilmas named Orko.
Orko, damn.
And that fool was America's Most Wanted.
Damn.
And I never knew his name. Do you remember Martin Moreno?
Yeah.
He's from that area, right? Yeah. From San Pedro. So he said, nah,
he went
bro,
to Banning.
There was a guy who came out of Wilmington, the gang, and then he fucking was at America's Most Wanted. And they said that fool went to that bar, which was the Cobra Bar. The Cobra Bar. A crazy ass bar, like a biker bar in San Pedro, Wilmington area.
Wilmitas.
And he was in there having a beer with the homies. And he goes, man, you were just on TV, bro. They're looking for your ass. We're killing somebody. I know, homie. I got that motherfucker in my truck right now.
Damn, are you serious,
yeah,
bro?
It's crazy, dude. There used to be this spot called Jesse's. That, see, they used to bus all the black people into Banning.
Okay.
They would bus us in. So it was literally like 1,000 Mexicans and 300 black people.
Damn.
At the school. So we used to go to this spot called Jesse's. They used to be right across the street from Banning. Dude, the food was so fucking good that there was a murder there, and then people went and still ate there the next day.
<That's> Washed away the blood, fucking.
Yeah, dude. It's,
must have had some good chili fries.
They did. They actually did.
Chili
just
cheese
picture
fries
those chili fries there, man. You know they're good, man, when after you're done, there's still like some oil there, you can lick it.
Or that last fry, dude.
Yeah, last fry is all orange.
Douse it in that shit. Hell yeah.
It is like an orange tater tot.
Mm, savor that shit, dog.
Did you just say savor?
Yeah. That shit savor.
Come on, man. It's 280 pounds.
256, dog.
56?
Yeah, man.
Be lying, dog.
I ain't. Well, let's crack it, man.
Nothing, man. I'm just here hanging with you guys, bro.
What's up, bro? So, what's going on, bro? Who's starting comedy classes now? Is there a Ponzi scheme going on?
We'd rather not say names. That way we don't fucking have to advertise for those motherfuckers. But, you know, some comedians out there that are making younger comedians.
Any comedians we might know?
Oh, yeah. We know them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And headliners, bro.
Come on, bro.
So I guess they're making these dudes pay $100 a month and making them pay dues, and then they have to show up and support for their shows, and then they get guest spots and shit, and then they get, you know, people to come to the shows.
So it's like a membership?
Hell yeah, dude.
Okay.
I guess it's like a ghetto friars club.
I don't get it. Wait, slow down.
I don't get it.
I'm like most listeners right now who are going, wait, slow down, Rodrigo. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm excited.
So a person... Like today, I just want to do comedy, you know.
Right.
Since I just came out of Greg Dean's class or Judy Brown's class, and I'm a Latino comedian, and I was in his class with a bunch of white dudes, of course. Then all of a sudden, like, I'm going to their spots. Then all of a sudden, you know, I walk into a Laugh Factory in Riverside. No, I walk into a Latino show in Riverside that has dancing after.
Right.
You know, and I'm used to going to Greg D's, you know, following these young, preppy comedians.
Totally.
And now I meet these big Latino comedians. And somebody approaches me, hey, bro, you want to be part of the Barcena comedy clan? Or what do they say?
The refried comedy.
What do they say? What's the approach?
I guess they go, hey, you want to come over here? You want to do comedy?
Hey, I know you just spent $400 on that comedy class.
But now you're going to spend $100 a month.
So you got to be really, really untalented to fall for that, huh?
Oh, dude.
Do they have like cards with their photos on it?
I don't know if it's going that far, but I guess, fuck, if you're giving $100, they got to give you a membership fucking card.
Yeah, you should have a card with your picture on it.
And I heard this from a young comedian that's barely started like a couple years, you know, some other dude's brother. And, you know, he's like going, what do you think, bro? Should I join or not? What are you, fucking retarded?
So you pay $100 a month, and what are the benefits?
You get to fucking get some guest spots with some national headliners, dog.
And pass out flyers.
What are the national headliners?
He was in Ontario last week, dog.
Are there more than one headliner? Or just?
I guess that, and then I guess they got their little brand going in the Southwest and shit, and El Paso and all that shit, dude. And I guess you get to work with them, dude, you know?
So as a young comedian, you pay $100, and what I got to do for a month? Do I get spots right away? Or
I guess you don't get spots right away. You got to promote their brand. And then, you know, eventually.
What's the name of the brand? Well, fuck it, we don't need a name.
Yeah, fuck
that. What if you paid 12 months in advance? Do you get a discount to like $70 a month?
I don't think that's going to work out, those details.
That's a decision you got to make right now, man. You got to ask yourself, do I want to join this comedy cable Ponzi scheme? Or do I want to turn off my cable at home?
Exactly, dog. What do you
$100
do?
A month, man. That's $100 a month, bro. That means that group to go hang out costs more than Netflix.
Yeah, fool.
Wow.
Isn't what Netflix $8?
That's way more expensive than Netflix.
Netflix has $120.
You guys,
maybe you get
a year, right?
Wait, maybe you
a month
with $100, you get a subscription to all their sets of materials that they do.
and that's what's happening. A lot of that shit's getting recycled, dude. You know, and I think, you know, they're fucking clipping any little cool little joke that all those fools have. I mean, Dick, you guys never charge anybody to hang out. Imagine, fool.
Now I'm thinking about a lot of money, man.
I know, man. You know how much money was left on the table?
Scandalous, huh, fool? That's a little bit of info I heard. A little bird.
That's cool. Like, I'm pretty sure, like, you could pull it off, though.
Well, yeah, they're pulling it off right now, though.
You could pull it off, man, because you said that there used to be a comedy list that you could buy, right, to cut the man in front.
Right, right, to take away the middle
man. So now $100 a month, that's $1,200 a month if you commit it, right? But there was a comedy list that used to cost $199. Now I'm thinking, man, that list is cheaper than that class or whatever, that group of comedy Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, and then those the student, this fool, the guy that told me about this went to another national headliners school and did like six classes and played, I think it was a total of either $600 or $800, and then graduated. In the end, he got to go up and do a little spot at the Ice House on Wednesday night.
Wow, man.
He had to pay.
Oh yeah, pay
$600 to do a spot.
Absolutely, man.
Wow, man. Crazy? And I thought sleeping On the curb somewhere just to be on the NBC diversity show was bad.
Yeah, there was no diversity up in this motherfucker.
That's horrible.
Have you heard of that show?
Yeah. The diversity show.
Oh, man. You guys want to laugh?
And it's all.
You want to get a good laugh.
It's all about casting, too. Not even about comedy.
Go watch Flacco. Go to Flacco's page, the comedian.
Dude,
by the way, he's going to be with me in Tucson, right? August 12th and Pueblo. August 13th, I'll be in Tucson, Arizona, and Pueblo. Flacco stood in line, bro.
Yeah.
At San Diego Comedy Club.
Right.
And he spent the night.
Camped out, right?
Camped out, and then waited, and then he got in. Then he didn't make it to the showcase. Then to drive back home.
He drove 4 hours in traffic.
4 hours in traffic back home. Slept all night.
Performed for 1 minute.
1 minute.
Well, at least he has a good story to tell one day.
Not anymore, because we're telling it.
Damn,
have you ever been through that when you started off Ruben Paul, did you ever see something like this where there was like places to go or, you know, like, you know. Mad cattle call or getting swooped up by a $100 a month scam?
Nah, man. Not when we came up. I don't even remember. I guess it was that one lady who had a camp, that class that she used to teach at the Improv or something. I can't remember her name. Some
Judy
lady.
Brown or something?
No, Bobby.
Oh, she does that. Bobby Oliver.
Yeah, that's the only person
Sherm's
I'd ever
graduated from there.
He's an alumni.
A couple of comedians we had on the show, Sherm's and Richard Chan. Chan.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's the only person I ever heard of, but no, like DL didn't go, hey, man, I'm going to start a class. Like, it was It would never, people would have just talked. People were so mean when I first started, too.
Really?
So motherfuckers weren't helpful trying to help you get by and learn anything. Yo, comics now have a bad set. The MC is kind. It's like, hey, he was trying. Give him one. Yo, they
know,
man. 10 minutes after you.
Like,
you
I was at the, when I go to, like, I don't really, when I go to places, like, they have an open mic at the Improv.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then Eliza got off, you know, and she was getting laughs. I know they were, like, genuine laughs. But then another dude got off. This little quirky white dude went up. And started out with a rap song. And I swear to God, I think his friends were there.
Naughty.
It was like kind of like, yeah, at least it's our friend. But I remember, man, that if it was that bad, comedians would start heckling you too.
Oh hell yeah, dog.
I think people, a lot of people, it's like we made it too easy somewhere along the way because maybe video killed the radio star. Maybe YouTube killed the comedy star.
Probably, man.
Oh, it has something to do with that shit.
I mean, comedians now are so sensitive.
Hell yeah.
Like, sensitive.
You can't say anything, though.
Like, you know, you should bust balls. Like, literally, you do a bad set, and then let's just say, I'll just use myself for an example. If Dio says, like, yo, give it up for Ruben Paul. I guess that he thought that shit was funny when he came up with it earlier. Like, he would just...
Like that!
Yeah, he would just go in on you, and then he would repeat one of the jokes that bombed. Like, they would just destroy you. Now these comics say something, if you just make a... Like, wow, maybe next time. And then it's like, hey, I don't appreciate you. Like, man, I'll smack the shit out. Yeah, it's just a whole different... It's a different game. That's why everybody's so sensitive.
I know. When I used to host Wild Coyotes and Montebello, and fools would bomb.
Oh, yeah. See?
And I would say, give it up for that guy, man. He's moving up to the bonus round.
Always.
I bombed hard there.
Yeah.
I bombed so hard there. I didn't even know Willie Barcena that well. He went up to bro and gave me a little hug. And then started bagging on me.
Oh, I know, fool.
Yeah, but then I would do it, too. I remember Richard Villa first went up on fucking... Richard Villa went up on Wild Coyotes.
It was the Wednesday
night. Oh, my God.
Bombed,
Wild Coyotes.
Bro. He bombed. And then Willie Barcena, bro. Hey, bro, I did those jokes on Kosher Clash.
Yeah, he went to the DJ booth. And when he was on his set, you stole that from Que Locos, bro.
Remember when we used to do comedy at the Hop in Lakewood?
Yeah.
That was a shitty room.
That was a shitty ass room, man, that the promoter wanted to be more famous than us.
Yeah.
I swear.
Tortillas.
And Lakewood and the Hop, I remember the promoter one time, like, he parked his Hummer right in front of the door.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Big old 400-pound dude with a ponytail and fucking sunglasses.
He was a boss.
Boss dog.
So, class, we're getting back to this class, but I'm interested.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money, man, huh?
It's a grid. Fool. People are paying, though? Phone bill. I don't know how, I don't know if they're actually going there and submitting their fucking money, but from what I heard, that they're going after a lot of the young ones that don't know what's up and shit. Yeah.
I mean, but what do you think you're going to get for the $100?
Well, if you're a young comedian, you probably everything.
Oh, yeah. You're probably looking at those dudes going, oh, these fools are headlining. These fools got fucking mad followers on their social media.
And
Destiny what's is funny here.
Is when they get to headliner and they realize how much money some of these guys are making, they'll be like, damn, why did I pay $100 for all that?
I think that's what the concept is. You do this, and one day you'll be making money like us. But, you know, they're not showing you their fucking, you know, check stubs.
Yeah.
Damn.
$800 flat for 18 shows.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude. Scandalousness at its finest.
Well, I was in Morro Bay.
Seen the pictures, though.
I was in Morro Bay, bro, checking out that big-ass lava rock.
How was it, though?
It was good, man. And I saw a lot of fools walking around looking for Pokemon balls.
Where's Morro Bay?
Morro Bay is by San Luis Obispo.
Oh, okay.
By men's colony. Camp. The men's colony camp next to a prison.
Oh, okay.
It's off the 154. Yeah.
When you say men's colony camp, that's a prison.
Yeah, it's a prison.
Oh, okay. sounds gay as hell.
It's weird. Like,
if it wasn't a prison, wouldn't it sound?
It's like you're driving to on the 101.
Hi, welcome to our colony.
Hey.
We're teaching comedy classes in the back.
$100 to get in.
Yeah, the classes will be cost. They cost two bags of cup of noodles and a fideo spread. It's weird when you're driving to Morro Bay. It's good you mentioned that men's colony. It's like you're driving, and then this is a funny one. you're driving there, right? And then before you get to like to Morro Bay, you gotta go through this 101 and by the beach. There's farms by the beach, by Pismo Beach, like real farms. And there's a bunch of immigrant people picking fruit right there, right? And you can see the beach, but when you're driving, all you see is their backs, right? And they're picking up fruit. You know, a bunch of Latinos, Mexican fools. You know, they're all doing a hard work, you know, doing their immigrant job, you know, right there, farmer. And then I passed by, bro, and I was a little stone driving by looking at them. And I said, work by the beach, they said.
Work by the beach in paradise. Fill those motherfucking baskets up,
but they got a breeze.
But it's funny because how can you say, like, if you live around there, how can you say we gotta get these illegals up, motherfuckers? They're working in front of your house.
Exactly, dude.
They're picking the fruit you're fucking eating, cocksucker.
Oh hell yeah, fucking dude. All the Cali, man.
I can never do that job, man. Fuck that.
That shit is hard as fuck.
That's a rough job,
bro. I think about it, bro, because I used to work at RPS, which is like UPS, but it's rapid package service.
Uh-huh.
And I used to lift boxes, fool. And I used to lift boxes only for 5 hours. No, 4 hours, right?
A little part-time.
A little 15-minute break in between, dude. And I would be sniffing powder, like the whatever dirt was on that box.
Right.
I would sneeze, and it'd be black.
Yeah, all that shit's fucking full of fucking...
And I did that shit for 6 months, bro.
Damn.
And I'm thinking, and my back, when I was like 22 doing that, my lower back would hurt. I could just picture myself fucking picking fruit for 8 hours.
Oh, sometimes that's just 10, dog.
And the heat, too.
Oh, man. Yeah. And they pay you per basket. It's not like they pay you per hour, dude.
That's where you got to get your family working with you.
That's how it is, dude.
Damn. Per basket?
Yeah, that's what they do. That's how they fucking do it up.
$100 a month doesn't sound that bad no more.
No wonder they did that.
So you pass that, and then once you get into Morro Bay, you're on this little highway, and you pass the prison. And I looked it up, bro. A lot of motherfuckers used to be there, right? And it's a nice prison. It's a big prison. But then you keep going. There's the juvenile hall prison.
Damn.
It's like a fire camp for kids.
Uh-huh.
It's a little prison for juvenile hall kids, right? And then you keep driving even more. There's a community college.
Damn.
And then for a community college. Now think about it, man. You're locked up in juvenile hall right there.
Yeah.
You got some choices. Am I going to go to the men's colony? Or am I going to go to community college?
But you know what? It just sounds like like you're just descending. It's probably a university, then the junior college.
Yes.
Then, you know, like you're slowly going down to prison.
To the everlasting inferno. Damn, God man. Damn. That's a fucked up cycle, dog.
I know, man. But me, I'm going to Morro Bay, bro, to body surf.
I'll see you in the sand, dog.
You keep fucking up. This could be you.
Yeah, man. A lot of the people that saw with the Pokemon looking for Pokemons, bro, I swear, dog, they look over 35. They might be looking for little kids.
Fucking baby boomer.
And it's sad because a lot of little kids are sad because they can't go out that far. Fucking 40-year-old guy killing everybody.
How's that game work?
I don't even know how it works, dude.
You turn it on, and then the game knows your GPS location. And then when you're walking, you see like a little blue balls everywhere, and you click on it, and then it spins, and you get Pokemon balls to fight with. Then along the way, a little Pokemon fool you gotta fight shows up, and you gotta capture that motherfucker, right? Or you might see somebody who's not part of your who wants to battle you.
Uh-huh.
So your Pokemon comes out, and his Pokemon comes out, and you guys are fighting.
That's cool. Just get the kids out of the house, huh?
Dude, one of the memes I saw was that Pokemon Go has gotten more fat kids to go out for a walk than Michelle Obama has told them.
Wow.
Motherfuckers don't want to eat carrots, dog.
I know. They'll go play Pokemon.
Fuck it.
Damn.
That virtual life, dog.
So what's up, Rupal? Where were you from, Banning?
I'm from Carson, man. I'm from Duomo. Yeah, that's where I grew up, man. Right off 190th and Wilmington, man.
Damn.
And then we got bussed into Banning back in the day.
Yeah. They needed colors, huh?
Yeah. Well, that's how we had a good football team. I mean, no offense.
Yeah, that's true. I went to Roosevelt High School, right? And our fucking school was packed, dog. There was no more room.
You either the school was packed.
They would send the best athletes to Granada Hills.
Damn.
Yeah, Granada Hills got really good, too. That's
Granada
right.
Granada Hills got a bunch of Latinos from East L.A. and a bunch of kids from South Central.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, their football team got good, too.
Yeah, that's how they got good. Because it used to just be Benny. See, my neighborhood was the all-black neighborhood, and they would split it in half. So half would go to Carson, and the other half would go to Banning.
Damn.
So...
Yeah,
that's
man.
Just how
like
it was.
In the Valley, Kennedy High used
Kennedy
to be
was
a white ass high school.
Yep.
So they started busing people and then they made it into the finals in football finally.
Yeah.
Finally got that CIF playoff.
Every big team that used to have all whites in the Valley, all of a sudden, bro, they started winning in sports.
Yeah. But the difference is they weren't busting into WeMas.
Hell no.
That's the difference.
So those, the white kids didn't get bust in.
Just the black kids, man. We used to get to school, man. It was like, it was crazy, dude.
You would go home going, they got computers there.
Not at ours.
Like, for real, they didn't bust no white people to Roosevelt High School.
None.
None.
All blacks and Latinos do.
Oh yeah, man. You were gonna go. Oh, my brothers, they got bussed because they needed diversity at Palisades High School too.
Oh yeah, so yeah. That's where Carson ended up getting their quarterback. They recruited their quarterback from Palisades. He was really good. And this is before you were supposed to recruit high school kids from other places. It's supposedly illegal. Now they do it all the time. All these schools do it.
Damn.
Yeah, it's dirty, dude.
That's fucking nuts. And that was going on nationally too, right?
Oh, yeah. Everywhere you can do it now. But back in the day, so you would take this one white boy from Palisades and then he'd go to all black school.
Yes.
And be playing for Carson.
And all he had to do is have an address of my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Because my little brother, he didn't want to go to Roosevelt, right? He didn't want to go to Roosevelt. He wanted to go to a good school.
Like, fuck yeah.
Right?
School.
So my mom wanted him to go to a good school. He could have a better education and learn well. So my mom put that at Marshall High School. It's a diverse school, bro. Filipinos,
right,
Asians.
Right.
There's no East Indian kids at Roosevelt High School, bro.
Yeah, Judge Ito.
There's no Armenian kids. So my brother got to see a different variety of people. And he used my address on Denby.
Oh, cool, dog.
Yeah, that's what you have to do. You'd have to get somebody's address.
Because a lot of those quarterbacks, too, that come going to high school, coming out of high school to college, go to Modern Day and shit. And they get recruited.
Oh,
right?
Modern Day, what's that, Bishop School, Bishop. They made a movie.
That one from Thousand Oaks too, where like Will Smith's kid goes to.
Yeah,
right?
A lot of those schools recruit. That's
Damn.
What they do now. You just want to get the best athletes where you could, you could be seen. And that's what. And at the time when I was there, Banning was like a powerhouse. Like my junior year, we were ranked number one in the nation.
Damn.
Yeah, that's how crazy it was.
Like in those times, like when Daryl Strawberry, he was like the killing it at Crenshaw.
Yeah.
Like back, if it would have been now, Daryl Strawberry as the kid, he would have never went to Crenshaw.
Yeah, he'd have been at a white school.
Yeah, he would have been at a white school.
It was him and Eric Davis.
Eric Davis,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, those are the people
really,
that we steer
though.
About. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember.
So they're killing our neighborhood, huh?
Yeah. Oh,
they're,
yeah.
They're taking our best athletes.
Oh, yeah, by far.
So that's why Roosevelt High Schools, I'm going to say they suck. But they're never like a city champs.
Mm, yeah.
You know who's city champs? Bosco.
Yeah.
Bosco Tech, right?
Bosco Tech.
Yeah.
Like, a bunch of kids who are not even Catholic go to that school.
Yeah. The only school that kind of...
Silmar, too.
And one of the only schools that kind of kept their athletes is Long Beach Poly. For some reason, they've been able to...
Stay original
with the people in the neighborhood. But their coach, one of their head coach, I don't know if he's still coaching them, played for the Giants, Pierce. Not Paul Pierce, but his name was he was a starting linebacker for their Super Bowl winning team.
Dang.
He came back and was the head coach for Long Beach Poly. So they always get the top athletes and keep the kids in the community. They don't go off to like Bishop O'Dowd and St. John Bosco and all these other schools where they're building these like super schools now.
I know there was a kid that was like, he was like 6'10", 6'11", playing basketball.
Uh-huh.
And he was bad, dude. I don't even know. I can't think of his name right now. But it started with a T. And he was playing in the Valley. And I'm pretty sure he is not from the Valley.
Yeah. Most of them
are. People never thought about you right now. And that makes like, so just say a bad athlete, getting back to Daryl Strawberry, who was killing it at Crenshaw High in those days. That's before busing, before that. So back then, they would have noticed how good he was in junior high, huh?
Yeah.
And then, like, somebody from Kennedy High, you know, white school would go, hey, Daryl, you want to play for high school?
They would go to the parents.
The parents,
right? Yeah. They were like, we want your kid to come play at our high school.
So
it's going to be a better school. won't be as violent and this, this, and that.
He'll go to college.
Yeah, he'll go to college. So the parents are like, do I got to pay for it? I'm like, nah, we'll take care of all that. And that's what they do.
Damn, same way they do with the school budgets.
Yeah, man. But like the point Felipe was making, how they take all the good athletes from the inner city. I mean, if you look at historically, that's what happened with black colleges. Like back in the early days, all the athletes, you know, it was illegal for black people to go to white colleges. So all these black colleges had dope ass basketball teams. And then when they desegregated everything, like all the schools, like Alabama and all these different schools, they started
Ivy League and all that.
They
shit.
Started getting all Cornell. The black players, and that's what killed the black colleges. Black colleges Morehouse now suck.
Oh
you
yeah,
know,
it's true
in sports. But you know, Alabama does great, and Michigan, and USC, and all these other schools. Well,
Princeton.
USC is different because yeah, they're on the West Coast. But
yeah, yeah, all that shit.
Yeah, dude.
Damn.
Always coming for the talent, homie.
Money rules the world.
We got to recruit Rodrigo, bro.
Hey, I got a membership plan for you, homie. Yo, $80 a month, homeboy.
Even the baseball teams, bro. Like all the good baseball kids, they don't play for Boyle High. They get bussed somewhere else. Man, they want to get noticed, bro. They want a contract.
Oh, yeah.
What high school did you go to? Oh, you went to Roosevelt. That's right.
We have Fred Wade, bro. He was a linebacker. I know he was an older kid, and that fool ended up going to UNLV.
Damn.
And he got hurt at UNLV, and that's it.
Should Knight hit his ass.
That fool broke his neck, fool, on a scrimmage play. He was walking around like a cyborg around the hood.
Yeah, when they have to put those halos on you, man.
That's tough, huh?
Yeah.
When they put the thing on the cage around you when you break your neck, is that screw on your head?
Yeah.
Because it's... They have to keep your head and your spine and your neck
straight,
all perfectly lined.
Oh my God! How do you sleep?
Standing up.
Yeah. But I mean, have they changed that, or was that back in the day?
Oh, back still, in the '80s.
I think, but I don't know how they do it now. But I'm sure
technology is crazy.
Version.
I mean,
that fool
had a big ass cage, man.
A little bird all chilling,
sleeping in the closet like Bender. from Futurama. So what's up, fool? I saw Ghostbusters.
How was it?
How was it?
Awesome, bro.
Hell yeah!
Oh, you liked it?
Killed it.
Yeah.
Oh, good, man.
I just didn't like that the older fucking Ghostbusters showed up as cameos.
Oh, like
it made it just weakened them.
Really? It kind of
like,
killed it.
Like Dan Aykroyd shows. I don't want to kill the movie, but right. He shows up as a cab driver, bro.
Yeah.
And then it's just cheesy, bro. And Bill Murray shows up as the guy who doesn't believe in ghosts.
Oh, come on.
Like, they should have shown up as, like, veterans, you know, like fossils.
Like a different department or
different
something.
Different department, you know.
Helped them out or something.
I just didn't like the cameo.
Killed the flow.
Or just don't even put these motherfuckers in the movie.
I know, fool.
They're already getting paid for being creators. You don't need them. They didn't help the movie out. You know that. You know who would have been a better cab driver for that scene? Felipe Esparza. Yeah. You
know
how much that
would have
helped Felipe Esparza?
Absolutely, man.
Forget about it.
I would have been like that.
I'm already headlining, but now I would have been headlining places I never go to, like Buffalo.
Yeah. So a movie like that will get you to those places where they don't like to book us sometimes.
I just felt like, you know, it's like, all right, man. I know Dan Aykroyd, you're already selling fucking vodka, motherfucker. Yeah. Well, you got to wet your beak.
Oh, they want to keep wetting that fucking beak till they die, dog.
Adam Ray killed it in there. He was pretty good.
Oh, good.
And for Leslie Jones.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
Big Les.
Big Les, bro.
Tearing it up.
Slapped a ghost out of that bitch. Did you see it?
I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to go see it, though, to support Big Les.
I saw it on 3D, bro.
It was badass or what?
Yeah, bro. I saw it with 3D because the other show was sold out. And it's funny, man. I was sitting down, man, and then like some food kept hitting my seat. And the fucking theater is fucking empty. Not empty, but like quarter full, you know, because nobody wants to pay $30 for a 3D ticket. But this fool, he was tapping me, man.
Doesn't that piss you off? It's like, why out of all these empty seats, you have to sit directly behind
fuck
me?
Yeah, I hate sitting next to
me. And they got assigned seats, right? And I like sitting in front of handicap because I like to put my leg up over that bar.
Yeah.
That's my seat. Though. Right? So this fool kept tapping me, right? And then like, you know, I wanted to say something, but see, I don't say I'm a violent person, but I don't know how to say things nice once they already bother me.
Yeah.
Especially if it's a stranger.
Yeah.
I know that I could beat him up.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough.
Yeah.
I want to tell him, listen, man, if you kick my seat one more time, we're going to have a problem.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that came to me. But the right thing, what it came to me the next day, I wish I had a next day ideas.
Gotta write a book, dog, a manual.
So I had homework.
See, that's what I get to be, the angry black guy. When somebody's kicking the back of your seat, then you can just look, because I'm using a white theater. So I can just put the angry black guy, hey, man, hey. Oh, I'm sorry. Then they'll move to another seat. But that's how you got, hey. That's the key.
Like in a plane, too, man. Yeah.
Oh, dude. Oh,
if it's a plane, I feel it. But then I look sometimes, and it's a little kid. And a little kid, you're going to stop jumping. So you're going to deal with it. But it's a fat-ass fool.
Yeah.
Like sometimes, at one time, I lead my seat all the way back, and I'm at, and the guy behind me said, hey, hey, hey.
And was it Fat Albert?
Probably. And I went, and I looked,
hey, hey, hey.
He goes, I got no room back here. And I said, well, it's not my fault, man.
Shit.
It ain't my fucking fault.
Cut back on the cupcake.
I just ignored him, you know, but I didn't put my seat back. But, so this is my trick, man. And I should have just said something, but I like to just instigate the problem. Like, the guy was sitting that one time in the airport in our plane. He kept hitting my seat, and I noticed over and over he didn't stop. So I waited for the motherfucker to get his drinks, and then when he got his drinks, I fucking put my seat back, bro, and fucking wet that motherfucker.
Perfect. Shit, that's what the
and dared him to say something.
You dare that motherfucker.
Bet not say anything.
Dared him, bro.
Fucking suffocate that fool with my fucking pillow.
But see, I start thinking about it. I take it to the next level, bro. In my head, I start going crazy. Like, okay, this fucking now I'm thinking this white motherfucker behind me is using his white privilege to kick my seat. Then I can start getting deeper and deeper. And I start remembering all those racist tweet I read earlier, and I want to take it on this white motherfucker now, who probably is not racist. But now I'm taking it to that level.
Yeah.
Vengeance.
Now I'm thinking, matter, bro. And I'm thinking about all lives matter. Because all lives matter is the new way for white people to say white power.
Yeah, exactly.
For reals, man.
Exactly.
That's the new way for white people to say white power and not get slapped by somebody.
Yeah. It's like everything they get for black people in steel, dog.
Well,
black,
it's funny because all lives matter didn't exist until somebody said black lives matter.
Oh,
it's
hell
like,
yeah.
Where was Blue Lives Matter
didn't exist,
when the
bro.
Clive Bundy militia was pointing the rifles at fucking federal troops, FBI agents?
Yeah.
Did anybody say Blue Lives Matter then?
No, hell no.
Hell no.
Pointing them at ATF agents and shit.
Then you start, all that shit was in my head, right? When that fool kicked me in the back.
Yeah.
And I was just getting crazier, man. I should just, oh, man. What if a lady tells me something? Then I gotta punch her too? Because my lady gonna step up.
I'll just sit there eating. Lisa, you wouldn't jump in?
I would, but I didn't know anything.
I know. But see, I don't know how to I don't know how to say something without being confrontational. So I just wanna just hold it in. Okay, the fucking movie's almost over.
Yeah. Let me tell you something. That's why I like to go out with my sister. Because my sister's a thug. So any problem I've ever had with a woman my whole life,
what the hell is going on?
Here's the thing. I would never, ever in life put my hands on a woman. But my sister will. she'll smack the shit out of somebody.
Perfect
man.
Plan B right there, dog.
Yeah, dude. I remember we was in South Beach, and this waitress kept giving our table attitude and everything. And then she got pissed and just kind of like dropped the drink on the table and it spilt.
Whoa.
Up. Dude, before she can get her neck around, my sister was all over that bitch. In South Beach, we all look like the angry group in the whole area. Cause you're around nothing but white people at the
right,
place.
Right.
And then she gets up and calls a scene. Everybody's like, oh shit. Yelling and screaming. But yeah, she's a thug, man.
Justice has to be dealt sometimes.
I know, man. I start digging crazy shit, bro. Now I can't even enjoy the fucking movie, bro. I kept looking at Leslie Jones, thinking about watching the movie now, and I'm thinking about fucking the people who made OJ, and I'm thinking about, oh shit, Leslie by herself here. Where's the other black people? She's there by herself to keep the white motherfuckers safe. You know, like, I'm watching the OJ, the people, the Made in America, how they made OJ. Yeah. And I'm watching how when they fucking gave OJ the Hearst commercial, these fucking people from Hearst, these white motherfuckers were thinking, how are we going to fucking make OJ not scary to white people?
Oh, my God.
So he's going to be running around the fucking airport by himself. That never happens.
Yeah.
He goes, so we're going to tell everybody to say, go, OJ.
Yeah.
So then I started thinking about how many times I've only seen black people on TV and no other black people.
Of course.
Is it because they wanted to be safe?
Yep.
So say, I'm thinking too much, bro. This guy just hit my seat.
Yeah. Just turned him into Cesar Chavez.
And I'm thinking, man, I should just go outside and hit a bull or something. But I don't want to miss the movie.
That's when you get the little pocket vape can, though.
You got melatonin at Ghostbusters, bro.
Then I'm
congratulations,
thinking, I should just go, fuck it. I should just tell this guy, listen, man, you're kicking my seat. I paid too much money for these seats. You're ruining my movie experience.
And Leslie is the only black person in the whole movie.
Yes.
And it's your fault.
But nonetheless, that motherfucker shouldn't have been hitting your seat anyways, dog.
Now, it wasn't even that hard, but it was just enough to,
to annoy you. Fuck yeah. Fuck, I hate that shit.
Was it a white guy?
Yeah.
Something wrong with your
foot,
motherfucker?
The fact that he was kicking your seat should, you know, make you question your Mexican credibility.
I was, bro, all night.
Like, damn, I'm not scary anymore. People aren't scared of me.
I got soft.
So decided not to read no more comments. Because
yeah.
That was ruining America right now.
Oh, hell
you
yeah.
Can't read comments.
People, nah.
I haven't done that in a long time, right? Because I never really do now. But then I thought, okay, let's see what this fucker's saying right here. I don't know how I got to this page, bro. Because I started to follow, like, who is saying this hateful stuff? And I go there, private, it's nobody.
Yeah.
Then I go, like, then I follow this black militant motherfucker, right? That motherfucker was dropping knowledge, bro.
Charlemagne the God.
And I was thinking, God damn, this fool is so smart, but so violent, too. But then, Then I started reading, because I went from one video to another video, right? I saw the video of somebody, right, getting jumped, and he goes, man, are you house slaves who just put down that video and beat up this fucking cop? and then somebody said, brother, you want us all to get shot? And he goes, man, we got to start the revolution somewhere.
God
somebody got to be a pawn.
Yeah, Christmas ethics.
Go ahead, homeboy. You go start that.
I know, man. That's what.
Chilling
you go start
then
it.
I'm thinking, then I'm
I got your back.
Then I'm thinking, yeah, man, everybody's brave behind social media.
Oh, hell, you got keyboard warriors like a motherfucker, man. Dog.
That, dude, the people on people say whatever they want that they would never say in your
in person.
Face.
Oh, fuck yeah.
They would never say it in person. Oh. I've only had one person say some crazy shit to me in person. This racist dude in Indiana. But other than that, most people won't say anything to your face.
Fuck no.
Sometimes, man, like if I had like $20 million, I would pay $1 million, bro, to come up with an app that gives me everybody's
location,
URL address. And I would show up to their house, bro, with a piece of cake.
Yeah.
Here, man, you won the racist comment of the day. Here's your cake.
Well, and then sometimes, like, when they try to critique your comedy, like, people will try to critique your comedy that work at Arby's. Like, dude, really? Am I mad? I'm getting upset. You're at home getting fucking pissed and don't even realize, you know, some 16-year-old telling you suck. That's why comics talk about that all the time. I always tell them, man, don't read your comments, man. You can't read that.
Or they tell you things like, man, I've been watching the same video over and over. When are you going to come up with something new?
Yeah.
So, bro, that video came out in 1999. There was a development of that joke.
Yeah.
But I don't explain that to them. But there was a development of that joke, and I did it in my one-hour special.
Mm-hmm.
But these fools think that you could just come up with 1 hour right away.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, dude.
It takes work, man.
Oh, by the way, man, some fool did my joke in a meme, right?
Another one?
Yeah, he did my joke in a meme, right? And then he had like a shitload of followers. And then like he changed it up a little bit. Actually, he did my whole joke, but he put the face of the guy from Parks and Recreation, the guy with the mustache. I don't know his name.
I know what you're talking about. I can't think of his name right now. I know you're.
Yeah, he's a comic, I think.
Yeah.
And then now it looks like he came up with it, right?
Right.
But then I was tagged by 20 people. I said, Felipe, this motherfucker right here. So, of course, you know, we went to copyrights on Instagram. They took that shit down.
Tight.
And then I went back to his page. I told you my joke, motherfucker.
Oh, so
you
can get
told
people,
them before that copyright?
People to, yeah, you can get people to take your jokes.
Yeah. Instagram. You go to Instagram and you show them the clip. It's a long process.
Yeah.
Fuck it, though.
And you go to, they go to your clip and they watch the video, whether it's fucking from the Tonight Show, from wherever it came from, and they have no choice but to take it down. And then they put it back up. You go after them again and they fucking close their account and they keep, that's why these Mexican ways or black memes keep opening up.
Yeah, Mexicans
pages.
Be liking yeah. shit. Fuck that. I hate that shit.
Wow,
man.
I didn't know. Yeah,
because
I had one
like
of my jokes get memed. This chick did it. Yeah, no. Oh, no credit at all. No credit at all.
All of a sudden, they're a fucking genius.
And she got it because I think Just for Laughs or somebody had originally, I don't even do the joke anymore, had tweeted it. Then she took it, took all their stuff off, and put her thing on there. Yeah, and she had way more followers than me, too. That's what sucks. Don't like, hate. A lot of them get popular on your yeah. stuff. You know
and
what I mean?
You try to write something, like, look at this hater.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, this guy's salty.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's whack, man.
But that's why, I mean, come on, man. Things have changed a lot.
Things have changed, man. We're going to start doing jokes like the underground comedy shows now, where nobody knows where it is.
Yeah. Well, that's how our shows used to be, remember?
Vaudeville.
All our shows were underground and nobody knew where they were. You got a fucking tortillas, dude. Oh, shit, man.
I remember doing a show for this comic, right? Funky, that guy.
Yeah.
And Mui Not Funny. I don't know his name, man. Oh, yeah, you were there, bro. You commented on how funny I was. He's been everywhere once.
Yes.
That fool, Chisco, Crisco, whatever his name is, Crisco Oil. That fool, man.
Yo.
That fool.
That shit was one of the funniest things. You've only been, you've been everywhere once. And for you in comedy world don't know, the whole goal for a comedian is to be asked back to a club. So for you to tell somebody you've only been everywhere once is the ultimate insult. And I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, man.
Some people wouldn't even get it, huh? Yeah. Cool, dog.
Yeah. Another hateful thing hosts used to do, Joe Torre used to do this. They'll go, give it up for Rodrigo. He'll be back. But not in this motherfucker. Yo, that they used to, when you didn't have a good set, you used to get destroyed. And it made you better. Because you felt like, all right, the next time I go up, I got to be tight or all the comics are just going to make fun of you after the show. Now, somebody have a horrible set and somebody go to me, oh, man, good set, man. You know, one time this cat bombed and he was coming off on one of the comics one time. I was like, man, don't worry about it. He's like, man, I bombed. He's like, man, don't worry about it. It was library night.
I think one time I bombed at the Chocolate Sundae, but it was like killing up like a 15-minute bomb out of 20.
Yeah.
If you fucking recoup, dog.
I had to go find a black room the next day on Monday to redeem myself.
Yeah.
And I did. And by the time I got to that room, Scruncho already knew.
Yeah.
TK Kirkland, I got off, right? And I just met him. Cool dude, I guess. And he goes, see, the problem, brother, you stood up there too long.
That's the whole.
But it was funny. I laughed it off later on. But see, I needed that.
That's what makes you.
I need somebody to tell me that.
Yeah. Bro. You need sometimes perform in front of hateful audiences. It makes you better. See, for me, like Felipe would go to black rooms. Felipe will tell you, I was one of the first black comics that would go and do the Latino rooms.
Oh, yeah,
no black comics are doing it. And you'd hear all the Mayate shit and all kind of crap, people yelling shit out.
Hell yeah. Ruben would get booed as soon as he mentioned in high school.
Yeah.
Like, fuck that.
Yeah, but you know, you'd make it through it, you know, and you'd try to, that's how you just got better. And it made your comedy more well-rounded. That's why I tell people, work every type of room. Comedy's segregated anyway.
Right.
Do the Latino rooms, do the white rooms, do the black rooms, and it'll make you more well-rounded.
Well, I remember I was watching Ruben Paul doing a set on Saturday, and I walked in there with some chick one time. We're just walking in. And I felt, it was the first time I felt like a comedian, bro. Because I wasn't even performing. I was just there, you know, walking in a regular day. And then Ruben Paul went far away. That Felipe! Yo, give it up for Felipe Esparza. Bro, I got the goosebumps, bro. I got points with the chick I was with.
That's
the only
want.
Reason I went there, bro.
Yeah.
To get props.
Sometimes you bring a chick to the comedy show so the chick can see that everybody kind of knows you or whatever.
But don't be the unfunny motherfucker bringing in a chick who's hot.
Yes. I know a comic who did that. And then we gave him some time. We gave him some time and he bombed. Because he was trying to show off. He's like, put him up so he can bomb in front of his girl. And damn. He went up and bombed in front of his girl. Then everybody started talking to her.
The Tony Sanchez story, dog.
Bad shit, dude. You've only been everywhere once. Dude, that's hilarious.
What's your worst bombing?
My worst bombing was at Patriotic Hall in
downtown LA.
Downtown LA. Oh, I'll never forget it.
Was so, Keith Morris hosting?
No. Shout out to Keith Morris. No, my boy Terrence Porter. We used to call him TDP back in the day. He was hosting a talent show, so I was supposed to be the special guest. I wasn't a part of the talent show. I was supposed to be a special guest. So the talent show starts.
It's a long ass show.
It's a long ass show, dude. They're booing everybody.
Yes.
And then they go, all right, we're going to bring out the special guest comedian. So they bring me out and they start booing me as soon as I walk out.
Damn.
And then I go, I'm not competing, motherfucker. I'm the special guest. So I started going into my act. They were booing me. Then I got one of the hecklers and I just started destroying the heckler. Crowd was going crazy. And my dumb ass, instead of saying good night, I was like, all right, as soon as they calm down, I'm going to go right back into material. So they calmed down. I went right back to the material and then they started booing me again. I was like, good night. Yeah, but that was probably the worst bomb at Patriotic Hall. And it was a hood room. It was like the Apollo of the West Coast.
Damn.
It was like right by the freeway.
Right by the freeway. What does it hold? Maybe like 1,000 people, 600 to 1,000 people? Yeah.
You feel like you're in a... You're like you feel at that place when they had the room. I only did it once. You get
me
this
too.
Ed Sullivan vibe outside because you can see there's no dressing room for everybody. So you walk in.
Yeah.
There's a guy with a horse. You're gonna pass by him on the way to the stage.
Yeah. It was just a talent show, dude. It was a rap, and people came there to boo. So to have a special guest comedian was ridiculous in the first place. So
eat them up.
Yeah, they would just come and eat us up. But then you would learn to go back and forth. I mean, that's what comedy was. When we first started with survival, Felipe will tell you. It was just about getting through this. Where I started at the Birdland West. It was Birdland in Long West. Beach. And Snoop Dogg and all these guys used to come to the show. It was the hood room. D.L. Hughley used to be the host of it. And that's the first place I ever did comedy. But what they would tell you was Birdland has the best hecklers in the country. Dude, the best. And that's how DL kind of became my mentor when I first started, because even though that's not the style of comedy I do, like I don't really go back and forth. I mean, I can do it. That's a skill that I have, but I don't do fake crowd work like some comics do.
Nah, that's
yeah.
You're fine, puta.
Yeah. So I don't do that. So, but DL, one thing I used to do, I used to give him bags and stuff so he can go back and forth. And that's how we started becoming friends, because those hecklers, dude, were so hilarious, dude. Like, if one joke didn't work, like, forget, you know, your first 15 minutes out of a 20-minute set. Now, every joke would have to hit, because if one joke didn't hit, all you hear is somebody go,
that
shit didn't work, nigga. That shit didn't work. That shit didn't work. Look at this motherfucker. Look at this nigga's shoes. Like, in the whole, for some reason, everybody would get quiet and let these guys talk.
Oh my God.
I don't know how you can lose when you have the microphone in your hand, but that's how good these hecklers were at the Birdland. It was like four guys. And two used to be at one table and two used to be at another table. And if you had a joke that didn't hit, they would run your ass off stage.
I said,
Dude, do you know how,
next.
You know, yeah, next, like, and if you stuttered a word, like, yeah, so I was walking up to the, so I was this nigga can't talk, get it out, why are you doing comedy, nigga, kill yourself.
They have like, merch too, bro.
Yo, man.
Hecklers have merch. They just saw little bullhorns.
The hecklers have merch, dude.
Keychain and shit.
Hey, I'm the one who booed that whack motherfucker. Come get this whistle. They sell the whistles after the show.
I remember.
Oh my god, dude!
I remember dudes getting bagged on so hard back in the days that if you had a camera, I would want to take a photo with him too.
Bro. Yeah,
yeah, dude! Oh man, you gotta take a picture with purple motherfucker.
Yo, yeah, man. So that's the environment that I started in. Like the first 5 years I did comedy, all I did was black rooms. I never did any type of room, and then it wasn't until a comic by the name of Alex Thomas and Daryl Heath, they had started a little bit before me. And I noticed they used to leave and take off right after the set. So, and then they'd be talking about the Comedy Store. I'd be like, man, you guys perform at the Comedy Store? They're like, yeah, man, we go to the Improv too. I had never heard any of those places. I'd heard of them, but I'd never been. I'd never done comedy past Wilshire before.
Damn.
Like it was always, you know, black people, we didn't go north of Wilshire because you didn't want to get sweated by the cops. So then, it was like, yo, man, they got open mics and you can sign up. And I was like, but isn't it all white people? It was like, yeah, dude, it don't matter. And then DL's walking by and DL goes, you don't work them white rooms, Ruben? I go, nah, man. He goes, why? I said, man, I don't know if they'll get me. And he said, nigga, we barely get you. So he was like, nah, man, seriously, you should try to work in some of those rooms. And that's when I went up to the Laugh Factory and I got in there. And then that's how I kind of started doing all those other rooms.
Damn. So when you started, fucking Daryl Heath and Alex Thomas were already flying.
Yeah, they were going, dude, I had never heard of Alex and he used to pack the rooms out. And I was like, dude, how long have you been doing this? He was like, a year. And I go, you're packing places out in a year? And then I found out he used to be a dancer. He used to dance on Soul Train. I don't know if you know this. Alex used to dance on Soul Train and stuff like that. So he knew all the club people, everybody who went out all the time. So he'd just invite all of his friends and they would show up. You know, so, I mean, he's a good comic, but he definitely, one thing that I thought was dope, it was always a home game for him. Not always, but a lot of times when he performed, he had his friends Foundation in the audience. Shit. You know, when I was growing up, it was war. You know, you got to prove yourself every place that you go. That's the environment. You know, whether I'm doing tortillas or wild coyotes or I'm doing
the hop,
you know.
I know there was 30, that Crenshaw show, 40-30 and Crenshaw.
Yeah, Regency West.
Regency West. How many of those black rooms were there back then?
Well, see, when I first started, people used to always say you have to go to New York if you want to be a good comedian. But when I started, there was Birdland West, there was the Townhouse, there was the Fun House, there was the Regency West. And then I had the Latino room. So literally, if I wanted to, I could do 5 spots in a night. Now, I'm driving like crazy, but you had the ability to do that. Now, you know, there's no real spot except the Comedy Union, which is black-owned. And then you have your black night at the Improv. Then you have your black night at the Laugh Factory. And that's pretty much it. And it's the same with the Latino rooms now. You have your Latino night at the Laugh Factory, your Latino night at the Ice House.
And that's it.
You think the same thing happened in comedy as happened in high school when they started taking the best athletes from the black neighborhood and putting them into the white schools in comedy? Like those black rooms started disappearing, right?
Yeah.
That's because a lot of great comics like yourself, D.L. Hewley, Alex Thomas, Daryl Heath, A.J. Johnson, you know, and these other cats, they started going to Hollywood more, huh?
Yeah, because what happened was you want to get seen.
Yes.
And people weren't coming to see you.
Like, nobody Robin going to Wild Coyotes.
Yeah, no one's going to Wild Coyotes. No one is coming, you know, to the hood to see. Like the first deal I ever got, Marcy Carsey and Tom Warner, who used to produce the Cosby Show, which was rare, Robert Townsend brought them down to the Townhouse to see.
That's
them, which everybody was power, like, yo, man. nobody does that, you know? And that's rare. So you have to kind of, if you want to get seen. Now there's YouTube and everything else, but back in the day, people used to, Felipe would tell you, they would come scout you, and then you'd be on, before you go on, like, yo, such and such from ABC is here, or this person is here, or that person is here. So you had opportunity to be seen in a white room or a mainstream room than you wouldn't in a hood room. So I never thought about that. That kind of happens. The transition is to kind of start working those rooms. And it's sad because all those people who probably don't want to go into Hollywood and want to stay close in those communities, they don't have as many shows or they don't have the access to the talent. They're just using like the up and comers because people don't want to go back.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I noticed that too. Like a lot of the comedy shows now, they're up and comers. That's why you could easily grab someone to pay $100 a month.
Yeah.
Oh hell yeah.
That's true.
And nobody is like, like you said, like when you and I were doing stand up comedy, this thing before 2000, mm-hmm. before 2005. You can still make a decent amount of money if you hustle.
Yeah.
These rooms were paying $75, $50.
$100.
$100. Yeah. Nobody was paying $30 but Rudy Moreno at the Ice House.
Yeah. Well, it was funny Felipe say that. Like, it gets to the point where, especially with the one-nighters or the, like he said, you can hustle and make money. At first start off, like, 50 would be the lowest you would get.
Yes.
50 would be the lowest. And then when you start getting good, then you'd go, all right, dude, I at least got to get 75. And then when you start headlining all these nights, then you go, hey, man, $100. Like Felipe will call me, hey, Rue, I got $100 for you. You know, hey, Willie, I got $100 for you. And then that would be the standard where, you know, I had to tell Sebastian one time. I was like, yo, dude, don't call me unless it starts at $100.
I know, man. They don't get it.
Oh, yeah. Come on, man. Come on. You did
like people don't understand that you're moving up as a comedian,
yeah.
And they're not moving up as promoters.
Yeah. Well, here it's a funny thing. I heard a promoter say something bad about Chris Tucker one time. This is after Chris had done Rush Hours. He was like, yeah, man, you know, he wouldn't even come do my room, man. You know, I remember back in the day, you know, I used to give him $600. I said, hey, man, I got $600 for him. I go, dude.
Back in the day, man.
Back in the day, you're still paying $600. You can't be mad at that man because he's not going to work for $600. He just made $20 million.
Wake up, motherfucker.
Yeah, I'm not saying he shouldn't go back, but that has to be his choice. You can't make him feel bad because he's not coming back to do your room.
Guilt I would have been like, I'm right here. I'll do it for $300.
Yeah. But to me, man, I would, no matter how big I would get, if I was like, you know, the biggest comedian in the world, I would still love to pop in and do spots at like a Tortillas and just show up because it would freak the people out and it would be cool to kind of give people the opportunity to see you up close when usually the tickets to come see you will be, you know, $50, $100 tickets. So I think it's cool when some guys still show up.
Like the Wild Coyotes, we were lucky to get Paul Rodriguez.
Oh, hell yeah, man.
Sean Wayans showed up.
Yeah, man.
I was like, when Sean Wayans showed up. You know, and I remember Dolemite showed up.
Yeah. Rudy Ray Moore, dog.
Yeah. It just gave the room class.
Yeah. Okay. You can't say that happened in the other fucking punk ass
room.
And
then I was booking everybody, bro. Like, a lot of black comedy got paid in my room.
Hell yeah. We had Corey Holcomb there.
Yeah.
And the first time he was there, he's always been a humbling experience.
Yeah.
And that's gave him a 75.
Yeah, we gave him an extra 25.
Because Corey would ask me about them rooms because he would come from Chicago. Be like, hey, man, you be working them the Mexican rooms? I go, yeah. He goes, how are they? And I go, they pay.
Yeah, he's all money small in California.
Yeah. It is, yeah, man. Dog. That's a hard part.
It is, huh?
Yeah. When cats come out here, like you can go to New York and you can just work the black rooms and make $1,000 doing five spots. You know, because it's, you know, you go to Brooklyn, you go to the Bronx. So, you know, there's a couple of whatever. Is this, you're doing gigs at restaurants and bars and different spots and you could hustle and make money. So, to come out here, it's just dried up. It's not like what it used to be.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
You know?
Yeah, so dried up Visalia and fuck with Leonard.
Drying up over there, dude.
Yeah, Leonard and Visalia. It was all these gigs you used to get. But, you know, when that stuff started drying
Fresno,
up.
Fresno with that DJ. What's his name?
Andre Covington. Yeah, he used to do that at that casino. Remember that little casino?
Club One Casino.
Yeah.
The Everlasting Forehead.
Yeah, man. Dude. That some of those gigs just saved my life, bro.
Yeah.
I remember sitting one day, Joe Diaz canceled New Year's Eve show at Bicycle One, and Andre Covington called me. No, Joe Diaz called me. Felipe, you gotta go.
Yeah.
I wasn't doing nothing, bro. Man. I said, man, put gas in the car. We have a show. We're gonna do something this
year. Yeah, man. People don't realize the hustle, dude. Like, so when you're getting booked regularly,
you get a call from Russell Peters. What the fuck?
Yeah, it changes everything. But that's why I'm glad for me, like, even working the clubs, like, when you start breaking into the clubs and headlining, and then you probably do your lap 1 year, you work all these clubs, then you realize you're working hard for really no money. For me, that's when the international stuff started opening up because it's like, okay, I could take my comedy around the world and get paid a little more, but also feel like you're on the ground level of starting something. You know, you always want to be the first person to do something. You never want to be the third person to come in and do it. So that's why now the clubs that I work in the States, it's worth it to me because I can pick and choose. Like, I don't have to go and do a club for a certain amount of money with no air and staying in the condo if I don't want to do that anymore. You know, that's kind of where you want to build to, and that's why I always encourage people to do different types of shit, do different rooms, so you're not pigeonholed and stuck in a one environment. Some comics only work black rooms, so when you try to go do this other room, you're not comfortable. You're trying to be something else. You know what I mean? You, this hood comic, all of a sudden you're trying to sound like Wayne Brady. Not Wayne Brady. That's a bad example. But you know what I mean? You try to say, hey, how are you doing? Like, motherfucker, you don't talk like that.
this motherfucker?
Yeah, I remember Alex would tell you about it. I remember seeing Alex in a white room for the first time. I was like, when he got off, because I didn't know you had to change your act.
Man, you went from Scrunchie to Anthony Griffin.
Come on, dude. Exactly. And you're like, dude, you don't talk. So that's one thing that I learned. I was like, I never want to do that.
Dogs from rich neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Bark like this.
Roof. Dogs from roof. The hood just doing you.
Roof. Black dogs be barking ass. Like this. Roof, roof, motherfucker. Roof.
Remember Willie Barcena, blue collar guys.
You mean white guys?
With soft hands?
Shit, man.
Damn. We'll fucking be acting like.
What was China like?
China's great, dude.
You get Chinese guys there or just military?
It's actually no military. It's
Hong Kong?
It's all expats in these places. And expats, for you guys who don't know, it's people who move to another country to work. So in China, there'll be a lot of teachers. Because if you can speak English, you can be a teacher in these Asian countries. And you'll make – they pay them lots of money. So my audiences consist of like Americans, Canadians, Irish, Brits. Any country that speaks English, a lot of South Africans will come to your show. So – when I started going over there, I think in 2009, 2010, I've sold more tickets than any comedian that's ever gone over there to China.
Damn.
You know, I don't know how it happened, but for some reason, they've taken a liking to me over there. So for me, it's great. So what that gives you is a true international audience. Like, say if you had a brother that was living in China and you're like, yo, bro, what'd you do last night? Like, yo, man, I went and saw this black comedian named Ruben Paul. So now your name spreads to all these places. I've been placing and they go, yo, my cousin saw you in China, and they live in Ireland.
Hell yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's the good thing about performing internationally, because it's so small that it opens up all these different countries to you. So now when I first started doing it, there were maybe three countries you could work. Now there's probably 10 countries you can go do stand-up in. Some you'd have, I mean, they do comedy in Vietnam, Cambodia, the Philippines, Kuala Lumpur, Jakarta. You know, that's why Russell Peters can be so huge, because he was the first, you know, global comedian like that. So he kind of started opening up people's eyes to westernized stand-up comedy, and that kind of is opening it up for everybody else to this day, whether it be myself or somebody big like Kevin Hart or all these other people. Russell is the one that kind of paved that way to be able to work arenas in Sweden and, you know, South Africa and these different places doing westernized stand-up comedy, because no one was really doing it.
What was that like, though, man, to go out to China? Like, were you nervous?
I was scared, man. Paulo Gada is the first person who
Paulo Gada.
Paulo Gada.
By the way, Paulo Gada's jokes are being translated in Chinese for Chinese comedians.
Really?
Yeah, told me that.
Yeah.
Some Chinese hack.
Yeah.
Translated his jokes in China. Dude. You know, a lot of that stuff is going on, man. Like, my jokes are being translated by a famous comedian in Spanish, which is why Felipe could probably do a half hour in Spanish.
Dude, I was in Singapore and I saw somebody doing Dave Attell's act.
Oh, are you serious?
Verbatim. But they don't know. Audiences don't know.
Oh, hell
the comedian, no. And I kind of told the comedian afterwards, I kind of called him out on it, but that's how fast comedy is growing. And there's a demand for it. You know, that's why you can make decent money up there, especially when you can sell tickets. But comedy is growing like crazy, bro. And man, people are still. But Paulo Gada is the one who kind of hooked me up, because this dude from Hong Kong just sent me an email and the money was shit. But how Felipe was telling you, so I turned him down, because I was working at the time. But then a year later, when everything dried up, you know, Paul sent me a message like, hey, man, this guy in Hong Kong is trying to get you to come out there. And I was like, yeah, the money was kind of low. Like, I could make that here in town, then to fly, you know, 17 hours for the same money, it didn't make any sense to me.
But then I was dead broke, dude. Homeboy sent me an email and he's like, hey, man, you want to come? I was like, yes. And I went out there and it was one of the best decisions that I made. Even though the money wasn't very good, I developed a following over there. You know, so now I can go back and I can make more money when I go over there. But if I didn't take the chance over there, because in my head I was like, I'll go over there. And literally I went over there for $1,500, dude. So I went over there.
Did you pay for your own flight?
No, he paid for the flight and the hotel.
How many days?
I was there for eight days. So I went over there, no merch, no anything, but the fan base and just being able to perform. I was scared because I asked Paul, I was like, why do you think I'd go over there? He's like, dude, trust me, your act will translate anywhere. I was like, are you sure? He's like, I wouldn't refer you. First show, man, my heart was beating all fast because you walk in, it's like nothing you've ever seen. And then you'll see some Chinese there too, and you're like, damn, dude. You know, what if I say Costco? They know what Costco is. And so those are the things that you learn when you perform internationally, like what references they'll get. But I'll tell you right off the top, they get most things because they get most of their comedy from the internet now. So the internet just makes the world small. So now Felipe does, you know, one joke I used to like when he used to do the food for less joke, yeah. Whole Foods food for less. They would probably know that, but even if they didn't know those specific brands, you could still do that joke, but just, you know, describe high-end grocery store, yeah. Low-end grocery store, and it would still have the same impact. So those are the things.
I felt like that. I was nervous, bro, when I was headlining Toronto.
Yeah.
I went to the Comedy Underground, that weed shop comedy club, and I was there like three nights, and I had openers there. And I know the openers were going to be funny because they live there. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, man, they're going to blow me off the water, these motherfuckers. Like, it could happen, you know?
Fuck yeah.
Especially you're nervous
as
a headliner. But and then, like, the person in front of you is from that town. And they're rocking 20 minutes.
Dude, local references,
you know, I don't want to have a reunion or reminisce what happened to me in Tacoma. Bro.
Dude, you want to hear? Here, I'll tell you a crazy story. So this is my craziest comedy experience by far. So they fly me out to – I had went to South Africa with Russell, and the promoter brought me back to headline a show there. It was a show called Blacks Only, which was a spin on apartheid. So there's this cat that lives in South Africa. His name is David Cow. He's like the Chris Tucker or Bernie Mac of South Africa. Like, all the black people love him. And South Africa is mostly all black, so he's big in South Africa. Amongst the hood people in South Africa, they love him. So I'm booked to headline his show. That's my boy. Now, what they didn't tell me is, and we're doing
Trevor Noah's going to be there.
No, don't even get me started on that, bro. but he knows Trevor. He helped Trevor Noah get started, this guy. But I'm not even going to go there. But so they put other comedians on the show, and it's a 5,000 theater.
Damn.
Seat theater. It's packed, and I'm headlining it. But all the other comedians.
I'm always sweating from my ass.
Dude. All the other comedians are doing comedy in their language.
Native tongue.
Their native tongue, yeah. They are destroying.
Oh, my God.
The heat is on, dog.
But let me just tell you how comedians ego. Before I went, I send an email to Dwayne Perkins. I go, yo, dude, I heard you did the South Africa gig. Give me some, you know, what do I need to expect? Because Russell has a different audience. That motherfucker, Dwayne called me, was like, bro, he was like, I think you're going to kill, but those guys on that show destroy. He said, you'll do well, though. I'm like, I'll do well.
I will survive.
So once I get there and I see how these guys are destroying the room, I'm like, oh, shit. Because usually as a comic, if I'm going on after Felipe, I could kind of get a sense of what they're laughing at, and maybe I could piggyback one of Felipe's jokes and just like write something quickly and just come in, ride the wave.
Right.
When you don't know what anybody is saying and they're destroying, like, that's terrifying. Now, there's this dude named Skumba.
Scruncho's cousin.
This dude's name is Skumba, and he's the best one.
Oh my God.
And they put him on. So listen to this. First of all, oh, I left it out. The show's 3 hours, bro.
God.
And I got a closer.
Damn.
A fucking marathon?
Yeah. And these, at least everybody is destroying. Skumba, so they have three comics, an intermission, two more comics than me. So after intermission, the one comic goes up, he does well. Skumba comes up. Well, as soon as he walks out, everybody stands up.
He's he is destroying the room. It was like Def Jam, Martin Lawrence, 1993, dude.
God,
it was, or 94, whenever it started. It was, you know, Def Jam when it first came on, everything.
Yeah. Bringing
the
fucking heat.
Dude, it was like that.
Backflips.
So I'm scared of shit. And I go to my boy, I go, what is he saying? And he goes, oh, he's talking about Oscar Pretorius, the guy
killed the lady with the no legs
in South Africa. He was South Africa. So he's doing a bit in his native tongue and he's absolutely destroying. And I got to go on after him. So he comes off stage and then I come out and they bring me up from Los Angeles, this and that. And I come out. And I go, hey, it's good to be here in the motherland. And all you hear people go, mwah.
And leave your leg to stand on.
Yo, because here's the thing. They hate when black people say, welcome to the motherland. And no one told me that.
Damn, so right there.
So, dude, I went into them and I explained to them why black people say welcome to the motherland and told them that we only made up 13% of the population in America, et cetera, et cetera. Because in their eyes, they see Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan and Kevin Hart and Barack Obama. So they think black people are like everywhere in America. They think like we're the majority population. They don't really know that. Like we make up a small portion of the population, even though we have a powerful presence.
Right.
So they don't really realize, like when you go to South Africa, the thing that jumps out to you, you go, damn, there's a lot of black people here. Like every job that Mexicans do out here in restaurants, black people do in South Africa. So when you go to a store, the person who busses the table, who takes your order, your waitress, everybody's black, dude.
A white man's nightmare.
Yeah. Well, they were running the country for a while, so they were just all servants to the white people there.
Took off with other companies.
Dude, it's crazy. So even when I went to lunch, they put me at this five-star hotel that Will Smith stays at. And I would go down and have free breakfast in their thing every morning. So I started to get to know all the servants there. And, dude, it felt like I was back in the 60s or something. You know, they'd be waiting. I'd call them over. They'd just be very meek people. And they found out I was a comedian there working and staying at their hotel, a black man. And my last morning breakfast, they knew it was my last night. All of them came out of the kitchens and clapped for me. So that's just crazy how they don't see a lot of black people in high positions there. But that's the type of country you are when you get there. It's just nothing but black people. And that's what stood out to me the most. You know, I can go a whole day in LA and not see a black person.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, I've done that.
I mean, you can go to certain areas.
So I went today.
Yeah. But I broke your string.
I grew up, I went a whole year without seeing white people.
Yeah.
But the only time I saw them were my teachers and the cops.
That's it. Yeah. 100%. So
there
in
was
high
no
school,
neighbors.
Yeah. I didn't have any white neighbors.
I got bused to Kennedy, but that never happened.
Yeah. That's so people don't really understand. Like this generation, I think, is more mingled together. Like everybody kind of
true melting pot.
The true melting pot. But for us, nah,
thanks to the MTA.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because the MTA changed everything, bro.
Oh, yeah, they can shit.
Now a Mexican guy from Downey can meet a girl from Santa Monica.
Yeah. Pokemon.
Exactly.
We don't have to take the fucking bus, the Brea bus to go to Hollywood
yeah,
anymore.
MTA is responsible for interracial dating in Los Angeles.
It is, man.
Yeah, man.
It's crazy.
Mingle. Yeah.
I feel like that, man, when I go to the Mexican consulate to renew my passport. And I see all the Mexican people and the ones in charge, Mexican cops in there, federales, Mexican people in charge. And I'm there with my, and then I realize how much my Spanish sucks. Yeah.
That's a little Mexico right there,
huh? They call you Pocho?
Yep. Started hanging out with some white dude, but he wasn't even white, bro. He was Mexican.
Mexican white.
Blonde hair, blue eyes.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Looking for a passport.
Now, is your Spanish terrible?
It's good enough. But I have American Spanish, which I speak Spanish the way an American person would speak Spanish. Like it's like using the American language and translated verbatim. It doesn't make any sense.
Oh, okay.
Like voy a ir a la tienda. I'm going to the store. It's an easy word, but some words are harder. Like if I want to say I want to make love to you, Te quiero ser amor, but it's not like that. Te quiero ser el amor.
That'd be the correct way to say it. Well, at least you grew up around other Mexicans. Like me being Haitian, there were no Haitians to speak to, so I lost the language. And then when I go to Montreal or something, and then I see a lot of Haitians, I get excited, and they're like, dude, there's like millions of us here. Why are you so excited? Because, and then when they try to talk to you, then you realize that, you know.
Does it come back a little bit of the flavor?
A little bit, but then you're embarrassed because they're looking at you like, why can't you speak the language anymore? Like, you know, I couldn't speak the language.
You're
I have
Dominican
nobody to practice
now, huh?
with it. Yeah, exactly. Well, I do have a little Dominican. My father's father was Dominican, but they were my mom and my dad were born in Haiti. So I can claim Dominican also.
You ever been to Haiti?
Haven't been to Haiti yet, but I'm supposed to go later on this year to do a show. They do an event out there called Stand Up for Haiti, where they bring comedians from all over the world to perform to raise money for the people there.
Cool, dog.
Yeah.
Damn.
It's kind of dope. But I've never been. But my real last name, my full name is Ruben Paul Moncito. So that's the Dominican.
Moncito.
Yeah,
Moncito.
That's the Dominican part of the name. The missionaries that brought my parents to America lived in California, and both my parents were orphans. So growing up, my grandmother was this white lady named Gladys Pooler, who my thug sister was named after.
Yeah,
my sister hates her name, Gladys.
Get over here, Gladys.
Yeah, and so I got a joke that I do about her, like when she went to prison and stuff, she got locked up.
Damn,
but yeah, she's something else. Yeah.
That thug passion, man.
Yeah, she was thugged out, dude. With Haitian Paris, it was horrible. It was horrible. My father wouldn't go see her the whole time she was in prison. Just me and my mom. Every Saturday morning, used to get up at like 4 o'clock in the morning, take that trip to Sybil Brand and go see her. But my pops would not. He refused. He saw her like the last year she was in prison. He went to go see her.
And was just because he was ashamed of her?
He was ashamed. You know, he's a proud... You know, immigrants, you know, immigrants.
Yeah, first generation, man.
That first generation, you know, he's.
Please don't fuck up. And he fucked up. And like, damn.
Is that like my daddy?
Yeah.
I don't want to go over there because I might get recognized by somebody. And then they ask me questions when I get back home.
Yep.
Like, I don't want to have a conversation.
Dude,
about
that's
my
so
daughter.
True.
I don't want to have a fucking conversation about my daughter being in fucking prison.
Exactly.
I'm a son of the community. Can we talk about that?
Yeah. Yep. That's 100%.
Just avoid any conversation about that.
Oh,
that doesn't want nothing to do with it.
Like, when you have family members in the hood, when you have family members that go to prison, you're not allowed to say they went to prison. They're like, yo, where Darnell?
Vacation.
Oh, he went on vacation. Yeah, exactly.
He's away.
Yeah.
Está alzado.
Yeah. For my sister, we'd say she went to college.
Penn State.
Get her master's? Like 7 years.
Yeah, she could get a degree in about 5 to 10 years for good behavior.
Well, she's in med school now.
Summer camp.
Yeah, dope. So.
And my brother was locked up for a long ass time. He'd be locked up for about 3 years, 2 years.
Straight?
Yeah, man. And then he'd just go back in.
It was better in there for him, dog.
A lot of times it is, man.
He had Air Force Ones in there.
Well, the hard part for most people when they get out, especially if they're hustling, like when you are making that much money, like say you're selling drugs and stuff, and then you get a regular job, it's hard for them to make that adjustment. Like, dude, I was making what I make in a month here, I was making in 1 week.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the, not saying that is right, but that's the pull.
It's unbalanced.
For them. It's unbalanced, dude.
That's like comedy, man. What I was making here in 1 month, I'm making that shit now in 2 years.
Because of that class, man.
Yeah, you bringing it, you wrecking it in, man. Yeah, man.
I went from $7,000 a month. I haven't made that shit in 2 years. I think one time I made $9,000. In comedy.
In a year?
One show or a year?
A year.
Oh, man. I could probably beat that.
A year? And that was all Laugh Factory.
Yeah.
And side gigs? I don't want to say.
Oh, dude. Yeah.
I didn't cut the side, but when I got the IRS thing and I filled it out, I didn't get shit back. But still, you know, $9,000, man.
Yeah, for a year, dude. For a year. And some people would go, why aren't you married? Because I made $9,000, motherfucker.
I know, huh?
That's why.
And I owe child support, too, bro.
Damn.
And think about all the money. Like, and then that's why you'd have to do these gigs. Because
2007.
You need somebody to pay cash, you know, that you didn't have to report, you know, like you're just not making any money. That's why I'm grateful for every dime that I make. And that's why I don't give discounts anymore.
Well, talk about Joe Diaz, bro, when the Malashas didn't had a check.
I need cash, you fucking cocksucker. Cash only, there's no fucking check.
Fucking choke your brother.
Nothing going back to Denver tonight. Oh, they fucking get wicked on those fools. And that little fool come back an hour later, here you go. And I need an extra fucking 100 for waiting a fucking hour. I gotta be in line.
I gotta be the best. Fuck out of here. That's a good, yeah.
You're the best Joe Diaz,
that's
bro.
That's a good Joe Diaz.
Good boy, Joe Diaz, bro.
What do you want me to do, Felipe Spaz? I'm a little tired. My fucking eyes. I got allergies. I gotta go to jujitsu in a half hour. Look, I need another water. What's happening?
That's fucking cool. Great, man.
Give some Willy, bro.
What's going on, bro? What are you guys talking about me, bro?
You're some devil, bro.
What's going on, Doc? Fucking the visor is getting fucking higher every year, Doc.
Only person I can do.
I'm like fucking Donnie Covington with the fucking head, Doc.
That's right, Doc.
Nobody
right.
Fucking likes me that's no right, more, Doc. I don't give a fuck, Doc. I got fucking animation money, Doc. Fuck out of here. Where's the fucking cigarettes?
Only person I could do is Darren Carter.
Do it, though.
He could do everybody.
Bow wow.
Shaky, shaky.
Hey, Felipe, what's going on? Yeah, I was gonna do a spot there. Yeah, what's the pay like?
He's all winky. He's all blinking on.
What's the pay? I know the booker's pretty cool, but I don't know. They got a little weird.
They got
a little weird there.
They don't want to buy me a Starbucks.
Yeah. I was supposed to go to Starbucks because I need Starbucks before I perm, and promoter didn't want to take me. And I didn't know what to say. I didn't realize it. Then I was like,
I'm
ripping what?
My chair out. It sounds just like him.
Fucking fireball, dog.
Even the complaints, bro.
Oh,
I remember one time we're doing a show in Arizona, and that guy said they don't want to take me to get coffee, bro. Oh, I don't want no fucking AM, PM.
I need Starbucks. I can't do AM. It gives me the runs. I can't do that. I'm married now.
You could do Johnny Sanchez too, bro, if you try.
I can do, you just got to be, you just got to complain if you're
going to
be Johnny.
Oh, what's going on with this, man? Oh, Jesus. Oh, man.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Felipe. Yeah, but remember, Felipe. Yeah, no, remember, no. Bro. That was like 96, 97.
The little remember, handful. Yeah,
remember, we were both at the store. Remember, we were both at the store. Then you came and fucking Jeff. That's right, Doc. Yeah, fucking Jeff. He was there. Yeah.
And then Carlos. God damn it.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right.
His fucking Fresno accent comes out, bro.
That's Johnny. Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's true. Yeah. But
a lot
but,
of butts.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a little hacky. Yeah.
That's good, man.
Oh man. I can't do impressions until I have to get paid for it. I remember, dude, here's the thing. In my act, I do no impressions. So I was broke as hell, Felipe, and I had just did the Aspen Comedy Festival. And I did real well at the festival, but I was dead broke. And this lady from Dave Chappelle had a pilot. And this lady from Disney called me and she goes, hey, can you do Dave Chappelle? She called me on a Saturday. I was like, she's like, I know you don't do impressions, Ruben, but Dave can't come in to do this ADR and we need to loop his voice. And I go, really? And she was like, yeah, and it pays $3,000. I was like, I'll be right over.
Absolutely.
But my thing is, I can't, I'm not the type of person like a Jamie Foxx or anybody or a Caliendo who can hear it and just do it.
Do it right away.
But if I'm around you for a long time or if you can play it back. So I told him when I went there, I go, just play his voice back. Say, play it 3 times. And then as soon as you play it 3 times, just hit record and I'll do it. And so I did it. And then I saw Dave like maybe like 6 months later. He's like, nigga, I didn't know you can do me. And I said, I didn't know until they offered me the money, bro. I said, I was broke as hell.
Money talks.
Yeah, but I always admire people who can do what, like Johnny can do great impressions.
Yeah,
a lot of people just have that gift, but I guess you got to practice. It's just not something I ever care to practice.
That's a little knack.
Yeah.
Good one, huh?
Yeah, man. The little.
What else do you do?
That's it.
Dude. You have any dates you want to promote?
Well, I'll be doing Montreal again this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you, brother. Yeah, I'll be doing that from the 26th through the 30th.
You've done it before?
Yes, my second time doing it. I did it the first time. It was crazy. I did it the first time 2 years ago. Had never went. Ran into Lonnie Love there. It was her first time she had ever done the festival. And it was Ralphie May's first time ever doing
the
festival. What's going on, Big Daddy?
This is weird how they pick and choose people for that festival. But I will say this. After going the first time, all the mystique was gone for me in the sense because they have a way of making you feel like only the best of the best get to be invited from Montreal. And then when you get there, you kind of realize it's like, this ain't the best of the best. It's just kind of who has the right relationships with who.
Yeah, because you're watching you know? You go, well, I know 10 people that are funny in this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, you really think that. But they get the industry has a way of making you think like only the best get in here. And there's great comics that are there. Don't get me wrong. But it's not as exclusive as you would like to think it is. And that's the thing that makes it kind of like, I guess all the pain and all the disappointment that I was feeling all the other years, even though people go, Ruben, don't worry about it. It has nothing to do with your act. Like I'd have people involved and go, you just couldn't get in it this year. We had to do whatever, whatever for, you know. So a lot of times when people say no, it's not an indictment against your talent or how good you are. It's just they don't have room for you. And that made me feel better. All the, you know, all the humiliation from the other years, you're feeling bad. You really don't have to feel bad. So that's how I approach everything.
I went there in 2005. To the comedy festival, and then I went back and later on to open up for Russell Peters in Montreal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they own that town. Oh, yeah,
Jeff
they own that town.
Runs that comedy festival.
Oh,
now.
Absolutely. Yeah, Just for Laughs own that. Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting is
Montreal Comedy Mafia.
I'm going back to Montreal after I do the festival. And I'm working with this other promoter out there, and I hear he does a lot of big stuff. So I'm wondering if he even has to cross, because as the promoters, they run Montreal. Yeah. Well, if I'm not mistaken, I don't want to speak out of line. I think even when Russell performs in Montreal, even if it's Just for Laughs or not, I think they co-promote the show.
Yes, they did.
See? Yeah. Yeah, they have a they
tight
like
grip on that one.
They're like the Live Nation of
and that's
a Montreal.
Show that he really, really wanted to sell out.
Yeah,
of all the shows.
Yeah,
and it did sell out.
Yeah, especially Canada is a very important. Vancouver, Montreal, Toronto, those are like the three big markets for Russell, where he feels like, you know, but he does well at all of them.
I met a lot of Italians in Montreal.
Yes, I'm doing. That's who I'm doing the
show
for.
A guy named Philip. Yeah. Phil.
Yeah, it's. I don't know who's booking this, but it's like me. Angelo Sarukis, Ahmed Ahmed, and somebody else. But that's in November.
Eric Griffin.
Yeah. I think Eric has probably worked for him. But yeah, the first time when I went to Montreal in 2014, I met my aunt for the first time, who recently just passed away. But yeah, my dad's sister, bro. I hadn't met her my whole life. I met cousins that I had never met my whole life.
Damn.
The whole thing. Because when they left Haiti, they went to Canada. And my family went to L.A., which is all the way on the opposite coast. So they were never really a part of our lives growing up. But yeah, so that was a great thing about going to Montreal for me.
Fuck yeah.
So you have any more dates, Rodrigo?
No, dude, nothing to plug right now.
Just, yeah. Oh,
yeah,
and
man,
then
t-shirts.
Let me plug this too. Sacramento. I'll be at Harlow's.
Yeah.
August 28th. It's a big show at Harlow's. One night, August 28th at Harlow's in Sacramento.
You been there before?
Years ago, but the owners contacted me about doing a show there and cut me a great deal, so I'm putting together a great lineup. Have you worked there?
I went there last year, last spring. Yeah, they're good people there, man. The guy
with
who
Mike and Jim?
Mike and Jim, yeah. From the Punchline.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jimmy,
yeah, man.
Cool, always been cool.
Here's the thing. I just sent Jimmy an email because he on his thing it says James. So I didn't even think it was Jimmy. And then finally somebody's like, you know, Jimmy is running Harlow's. So I sent him an email like, dude, I've been sending you these proper emails and all this whole time it was you. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to go to them. They gave me a great door deal and everything. So I'm looking forward to doing that. August 28th.
Ruben Paul at Harlow's, people.
Sacramento.
What's up, fool? Show up, man. Tell them, man, I heard your What's Up Food podcast. I'm Haitian, too.
Yeah. Thank you, brother.
Don't be
Haiti. Don't be Haitian.
Shout-outs to Ruben, a.k.a. Toes, from Baldwin Park, who listens to the podcast from work and left us a nice iTunes review. Shout-outs to this fool right here.
Aaron M909.
From Ontario. I'll be there at the Ontario Improv in October. Thanks for the iTunes review. Mr. T. Jax on Instagram, who listens to Mrs. T. Jack Hayes.
Hawkes.
Mrs. G. Hawkes.
Jock.
Jock. Mrs. T. Jocks on Instagram, who listens to all the podcasts but can't seem to leave a comment on SoundCloud. I think all you need to do is click on the audio waves, and it will automatically come up with a place to leave a comment. As long as you're logged in. Also, Corpus Christi. That Selena statue will never be the same. Corpus Christi, Texas, July 21st to the 23rd. That's this week, this weekend, at Mesquite Street Comedy Club. Coming with Rodrigo Torres and Keith Manning.
Get off the field.
New York City, July 28th to the 31st. At Caroline's on Broadway. Chris Thorin. Rodrigo Torres and me, that's right, people. When somebody cancels, Felipe fills in at the last minute. Because that's the only place to fill in. And if they would have called me somewhere in a place that I want to go to, hey, man, we need to fill in Modesto. Nah. No, I'm just kidding. I would have went too. But New York City, how can you turn that down?
Can't turn that down. Caroline's?
I'm going to break in even. I'll go. Also, man, Hermosa Beach. California, August 10th, one night only at the Comedy and Magic Club. That's right. Anybody want to meet me in the afternoon? I'll be bodyboarding or try to body do something in the beach. Maybe hot box.
Hey, can I tell people they can get dates from our website, RubenPaul.com, and on social media, I am Ruben Paul. That's I-A-M Ruben Paul.
Also, Tucson, Arizona, August 12th, one night only at TCC Music Hall. Pueblo, Colorado, August 13th, one night only, one night only at Pueblo Memorial Hall, people. Also, man, everybody, man, I'm going to go to therapy, man, so I want to kill nobody.
Oh, good, man.
And because I'm a good man, and I'm going to stop reading social media.
Yeah, people need to stop kicking your seat, too.
People don't kick my seat, motherfucker, man. I don't give your babies 12. I'll spill him. What's up, fool? Also, check out the Inch of the Casserole podcast. And yeah man. Oh yeah, shout out. I'm gonna show you guys something before we go, man. In Dubai, we have these two Muslim chicks who what's their name, bro? What's that girl's name right there?
Jazak.
A shout out to Jamelia
Az.
Jamelia Az. She's on Instagram, Jazak. She's from Dubai, and they made a video. This is how you don't know how big the world is. You know, you think we're just here in East LA.
Uh-huh.
But we got a couple of girls here from Dubai who watch Blood In, Blood Out over and over. And they quoted the movie, bro. Here we go.
What the fuck, bro?
Yo, man. Told you, dude.
So that's funny, man. There's these two chicks. You want to go check them out, man? They're on my Instagram. And there are these two girls. They're even mad dogging the face. If you ever seen Blood In, Blood Out, you should watch the movie, man.
Don't
be left out behind, man.
Must watch.
And with that, shout out to her. You are now Latina.
Oh, shit. It's John Wayne. You're just a bunch of little chavales, a whole bunch of ya Chicanos.
Thank you, Ruben Paul.
Thanks for having me, man. Keep shining, dog.
Thanks, brother.